Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Charts at Billboard.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Deputy Editor Digital.
Hello, Katie.
Hey, Keith.
How's it going?
Great. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, I'm just fine.
I thought you were going to go with your splendiferous.
Splendiferous. That too.
Yeah, that too.
Because as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we'll be chatting about the Jonas Brothers' return. The sibling trio of Kevin, Joe, and Nick Jonas is back with their first number one hit ever on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, Sucker. It's the first taste of what we assume is going to be a brand new album from the band, along with, we hope, an upcoming tour, because I don't think they've actually announced any sort of specifics about those things.
It's all coming.
It's all coming. We assume all this stuff is coming.
So we'll be talking about why it was the right time for a Joe Bros return, how Sucker has become an out-of-the-box hit, and what we hope to see from the Joe Bros in the future. Plus, we have an interview with Livia. The rising singer-songwriter's latest single, Damn, is currently on our pop songs chart, and we caught up with her to talk about the top 40 hit, her almost decade in the music industry, what she has planned next, and more. So stick around for all that.
And there's also a very specific Jonas Brothers connection to her that we'll tell you about a little bit later.
Mm.
Ooh. I don't know why I turned on my smooth jazz voice.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Let's talk charts. It's a slow week on both the Billboard 200 Albums chart as well as the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart. On the former, not a single debut is inside the top 150 of the chart. So kind of slightly boring. And the entire top three are all non-movers. Juice WRLD's Death Race for Love remains at number one for a second straight week. Meanwhile, over on the Hot 100 charts, Ariana Grande's Seven Rings nets its seventh week at number one. Fitting. When Gary Trust noted that in his story, when I was reading his draft of his story, I was like, oh, this reminds me of when Prince's Seven peaked at number seven on the Hot 100. I don't know. I thought that was fun.
Numerology.
Yeah. Well,
You know, there's some other numbers involved in Seven Rings as well, because the New York Times reported last week that 90% of the song's royalties are going to Rodgers and Hammerstein, who wrote My Favorite Things,
which is interpolated into Seven Rings.
Exactly.
My Favorite Things from Sound of Music.
Yes. And so, yes, the I mean, it makes sense. When you hear it's very clear, obviously.
They could have asked for 70% just to keep everything really 70.
Ah, that's true.
Dun-dun-dun.
But yeah, people were really... So, the estate's making some money there.
That's
to say the very least.
That is super fascinating that Ariana just, like, gave up 90% of the publishing to be able to do the song, but... Yeah, that's a chunk of change.
Indeed. Especially with a hit this big.
Well, still in the top 10 on the Hot 100, Jonas Brothers' former... How do I say that, Katie?
What's that?
Jonas Brothers's. When I'm doing a possessive of Jonas Brothers.
I mean, if you're saying it out loud, I would just say the Jonas Brothers' former number one.
All right. Wouldn't
say Brothers's.
Yeah, that sounds that sounds dumb. Okay, so Jonas Brothers' former number one, Sucker, dips 6 to 8 in its third week on the list, but earns the Greatest Gainer Airplay Award on the chart as the song drives 27 to 19 on the all-format radio songs chart with a 26% gain in audience. It's by far the Joe Bros' biggest radio hit ever. They only actually notched two earlier radio songs hits with Burnin' Up, which peaked at number 55 in 2008, and When You Look Me in the Eyes, peaking at number 61 that same year. So far, Sucker, which became the Joe Bros' first number one on the Hot 100 when it debuted atop the tally, has earned 87 million on-demand streams in the U.S., according to Nielsen Music, through March 21st, and has sold 139,000 downloads. Any way you slice it, it's a hit.
Any way you slice it.
Perhaps diagonally, or maybe just in a nice, robust, you know, crisscross.
So we were thinking maybe we should talk a little bit about, like, why this Jonas Brothers return seems to have worked as well as it has.
And I'm happy to talk about the Joe Bros any old time.
Exactly. So I think probably the first reason we should start with is probably that absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Indeed. Nostalgia is a hell of a thing.
Indeed. They've only been away for, 6 years? Not even 6 years, really. They announced their breakup in 2013.
Yeah.
They were supposed to tour. They were supposed to release an album that year.
They played, like, a few dates, and then they had Pom Poms was a single. Mm. And then the whole thing just was, like, they had some sort of, like, due to some sort of, like, I don't know what the phrasing was, but basically it's like, we're putting all this on the back burner.
Yeah, which things must have been that bad
yeah.
at the time. But they're back, and they're clearly happy and being brotherly again. And the fans miss them.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Nostalgia. Also, I think, in the interim, both Joe and Nick got to explore their own kind of solo, non-Joe Bro musical endeavors on their own and became bigger stars in the process, which makes any, re-teaming even more powerful. And it kind of, in a way, is like when the Spice Girls got back together the first time, because all five of them went on to have great success solo. So when you reunite...
Especially
in the UK. I mean, not as much here in America, but in the UK, like it. So when they toured as the Spice Girls return, all five of them got a solo moment in the show to do, like, a solo hit. I mean, Victoria actually just did, like, a catwalk presentation.
So I was going to say, what will Kevin do?
He brings his wife on stage and they do a reality TV show moment.
Exactly. He'll be a dad, an awesome dad.
It also reminded me, like, when New Edition came back, or Katie's faves, when the Eagles returned in 1994.
Indeed.
Did the Eagles perform any, like... Don Henley, Glenn Frey solo stuff?
They don't, but Joe Walsh does his stuff that he did pre-Eagles.
Is that when, like, Don goes off stage and, like, takes a shower?
It's like the big Joe Walsh guitar moment. Oh, like, he'll do all his James Gang stuff and all the stuff that he did before Eagles. I guess that's different. We've really digressed.
Sorry.
But what you said really makes me think about how I kind of feel about this entire thing, because when the Joe Bros originally existed in their original incarnation, I was too old for it. Or maybe there were people probably my age who liked it, but it definitely passed me by. I didn't watch the Disney show.
Yeah,
I didn't watch Camp Rock. It was all something that, like, existed away from my consciousness. But then after they broke up, Nick had Jealous, huge, massive breakout solo hit. Joe had Cake by the Ocean with his group DNCE, and all of a sudden, like, I was a fan of Nick Jonas, and I was a fan of Joe Jonas, and so now coming back together and putting them as Joe Bros, it's like, I'm not looking at it as a nostalgic thing for the Jonas Brothers, I'm looking at it as, oh, great new music from two great new pop stars, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think I'm not alone probably in that too, given the success of DNC and Nick Jonas' solo career.
I think they'll probably be maybe pleasantly surprised by how diverse their crowds might be now.
It's not just going to be people who were 16 in 2012.
No.
It's not. Like, it's definitely going to be women of all ages, lots of women. I think women will be there in droves.
There's going to be a contingent of the gays as well.
Indeed.
Suddenly, with Nick and Joe being, half naked various times in their, solo careers.
Well, even back when they were originally around, remember how, like, coordinated their outfits were and, like, how fashion-forward they were at
the
time?
They were. I mean, they're very fashion-forward right now.
And yet they are, but, like, in a different way. It's, like, not quite as colorful and not quite
scarves and hats. Lots of scarves and hats in the old days. okay, so just how did Sucker debut at number one 3 weeks ago on the Hot 100? And why is radio embracing it so wholeheartedly? The track rises 27 to 19, as we said earlier, on the all-format radio songs chart, and climbs 16 to 13 on the Pop Songs Airplay chart. The Pop Songs Airplay chart monitors the most played tracks on top 40 programmed radio stations in the U.S.
Yeah.
Well, first, the song launched with 43.7 million U.S. streams in the week ending March 7th, according to Nielsen Music, which made it the most streamed song of the week among all tracks.
And it didn't hurt that they simultaneously released it with a beautiful video. Cinematic video that starred all their gorgeous wives.
Yes.
/ fiance for Sophie Turner.
The video certainly did help things a lot. So you got not only get the song, but also the video at the same time. So it's a double threat, the audio visual components.
Indeed.
Also, the cut started out at number one on the digital song sales chart with 88,000 downloads sold. So you had all these metrics working towards it. But of course, you know, you wouldn't have all these great streams and sales and, you know, the airplay as well, unless necessarily the song didn't, like, sound good.
Right.
You know?
And instead, it sounded amazing. Yeah. It's a great song.
Like, you know, I remember Katie's reaction. It was just like, this is a great song.
No, it's, like, an undeniably great song. And I think the when I really realized how good it was, because I'd probably listened to it a handful of times, and then I watched the carpool karaoke with the Jonas Brothers,
mm-hmm.
and they started singing Sucker, and I didn't realize right away that it was Sucker, and I was like, which one was this? I don't remember this one.
Like, wow, this one sounds different from
and
the rest of their material.
And they did a little hand claps with the chorus, and I was like, oh, this song is, like, just undeniably great.
Yeah. Well, you know, the song actually comes from a team of A-list writers and producers. It was co-written by the three Joe Bros, along with Ryan Tedder, of course, of One Republic, Louis Bell, and Adam Feeney, who is also known as Frank Dukes when he does production work as a producer. Tedder has written and produced
everything.
Adele's Rumor Has It, Maroon 5's Maps, Beyoncé's Halo, just to begin.
And Bell is super red hot, too. He actually wrote and produced Halsey's Without Me, number one hit. Post Malone's Sunflower, number one hit.
Well, not yet on the Hot 100.
Oh, was it?
Oh, actually, wait.
It was.
Yeah. You're right.
I'm like, wait, what?
Katie slapped the chart guy around.
And 5 Seconds of Summer's Youngblood, which was the number one pop songs hit.
And Feeney has written or produced such songs as Post Malone's Better Now, Camila Cabello's Havana, and Lorde's Greenlight, even. I'm pretty sure of that last one.
Yeah.
I'm pretty
sure. Sounded pretty sure.
I sound so confident. I was sounding confident up until that last one.
And okay, so what do we want next from all of this? Like, obviously the entrance was impeccable. The song is great.
Can you stick the landing?
Number one. Exactly. Like, so is there a full album full of Sucker-worthy hits?
Well, I mean, if they worked with all these people, can you imagine?
Maybe. I mean, it could be. So, and you mentioned tour, the possibility of a tour.
I mean, I think that they've basically said that I think all these things are probably coming.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe in due time we'll get all the specific details. I mean, yeah, an album full of pop bangers. Great.
I wonder if this all happened much more quickly than they expected. Like, they might have thought, let's get Sucker out, see how it rolls out, see
and then,
how it
whoops.
Does. Right. And it's like, oh, wait, we need the album out in like a month because Sucker already hit number one and, like, it's we, like, can't go higher than that.
It's like they're burning up right now.
Oh, jeez.
Get it? SOS, SOS, we need to put out that album.
Even though I wasn't following the Joe Bros then, I do understand that joke.
So big tour.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, what do you think they're, like, at the arena level, or can they, like, pull off a stadium show somewhere?
Oh, man. I would say arena.
Yeah, maybe stadium's too much.
I mean,
unless it was, like, a one-off, like, with, like, some special guests.
Yeah, they could probably fill up the Rose Bowl, like, but not
Ooh,
every
you heard it here
single
first.
Stadium.
Katie's saying the Jonas
Don't
Brothers
you think
are going to sell
in
out the
Los
Rose Bowl.
Angeles, in, like, Los Angeles County Orange County could fill up
if
Ventura
that,
County.
If
everyone
that,
comes
if that,
to the Rose
if that
Bowl.
Is like your one and only Southern California date and you play the Rose Bowl,
yeah.
Maybe.
So if you'd like to, Jonas Brothers, consider it.
What if they did like a, they could do like a double bill or something with someone if it's like a one-off show.
Ooh, that's true.
Yeah.
They could reunite a different sibling act.
Sure.
I'm trying to think who that would be.
I don't know. Well,
I don't know who that is either.
I go
Jonas
to my
Brothers in Heim.
Go to my Osmond's well. I'm like, no,
yeah, exactly.
Not that one. Okay, so.
Is it time for Livia, or should we keep talking about Joe Bros forever? Actually, we can keep talking about Joe Bros in our Livia interview.
That's right. Weirdly enough.
So now it's time for our interview with Livia. And speaking of the Jonas Brothers, Livia got her start alongside the trio back in 2010 when she was managed by Kevin Jonas Sr. And she toured with the Joe Bros. She was under the name Olivia Summerlin at the time, which is her name. Now she's back as just Livia, and she has a top 40 radio hit called Damn and more music waiting in the wings. So we talked to her all about the success of her latest single, her plans for releasing a debut album after almost a decade in the industry, her recent graduation from UC Berkeley with a degree in economics.
Sure. I mean,
she's really interesting and much more. So please enjoy our interview with Livia.
I don't wanna calm down. I don't really care what comes out of my mouth, and I don't wanna fall out. But ain't nobody safe when the truth comes out. Yeah, how did we become this?
Hello to Livia, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming in. And, you know, we specifically wanted to talk to you because your song Damn is currently climbing our pop songs chart.
It's so exciting.
Yeah, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And, I mean, how does it feel to have this, like, top 40 radio hit?
It's definitely surreal. I just love, like, looking at the chart. Like, I'll go back and just, like, Google the chart because it's just so cool and amazing and surreal to see that. I know that's really nerdy.
We appreciate that. Keep coming to billboard.com.
Give us those visits. Yeah,
exactly. It's all me.
Well, no. Let's. It's just you. You are the one visitor to Billboard.
Yeah,
just repeatedly.
Just refreshing. Trying to pinch myself, you know.
What do you think it is about Damn that is, like, really connecting with listeners?
I think the fact that it's... just the concept can be interpreted a lot of different ways, I feel, because for me, I always like songs, even if they seem sad at first, to have sort of a positive spin in some way. So it's a breakup song, but it's about, you know, the fact that you're making a hard decision, but it's the right decision. So I'm seeing it as, you know, a good thing in the end, and it's hopeful as well. It's nostalgic, but it's hopeful, and it sort of works for people who have just broken up with somebody, are in a relationship that's sort of rocky, and they're maybe considering breaking up. The only person that's not going to work for is somebody who's, like, super happy in their relationship. But I definitely know people, and I've even gotten, like, messages and tweets from people being like, I'm in a fully, like, supportive and wonderful relationship, and I still, like, love Damn. And I like seeing that comment, because a lot of times I'll get the comments, you know, that are like, oh my gosh, I can relate to the song so much, and I'm kind of like, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know,
I hate to break it to you, but
I know, I'm so sorry.
There could be trouble in paradise. You know, what you said about the song kind of having, you know, it's like some songs will have like an up-tempo beat, but then they'll have sort of a melancholy message, or
yes,
a song could have a slow vibe, but it's really up-tempo, or it's like up-tempo. Like, there's like those tricky songs where they fool you. And I think it's interesting, you know, you have like dance mixes of the song, there's an acoustic version of the song, there's the radio version of the song, and they all work. And I think that the core of it is just the song itself. Like, when you can put it in different permutations and it still sounds good, that's probably when you have a good song.
Yeah, that's a great sign. And I think, like, I love all the remixes, the acoustic version. It's cool to see it live in different forms and that it still works, like you said.
Yeah.
But what you were describing, two of my best friends and I, who we write and we work all the time, they call it, and so now I start calling it emo turn up.
Oh.
When it's like a song that...
That's
so
a
we always
might
get
steal
like, oh,
that.
This is a great emo turn up. But you should. They would love it. You know, a song like... I'm trying to think of a good example, but that maybe sounds at first listen like it's like a fun song, but the message
there's
is actually
There's got to be a million,
really,
and I can't think of any
so
right now.
Many.
I mean, any number of Chainsmokers songs,
oh, right,
you know,
that's
are
fair.
Very like, you know, put your hands in the air, you're breaking up tonight. What? No. No.
Or like Sorry by Justin Bieber, I think is one of the ones that originally started us out on like emo turn up.
That's amazing. Oh, sorry. I thought I was going to cut you off.
This is your question now.
Oh, is it like back and forth? Okay. Now
a little bit.
We try to share it.
You've been making music professionally since 2010. So you were just 15 at the time. You know, obviously a lot has happened over the past 9 years, including you adopting the new stage name of Livia.
Yes.
Was that name change kind of intended to signify like a new era in your music?
Yes, definitely. I was working with new people. I had sort of taken a bit of a break. I had been touring a lot and with like different music and a different team. And then I sort of took a break from being out in, you know, on stage as much and sort of being back in the studio. And with that and with a new team and new producers and a bit of a new sound, I just felt like a new name was in order too. And it's, you know, it's still my name. It's my two nicknames sort of pushed together and, you know, all caps, sort of like Roman numerals. I like it.
Oh, yeah,
it's
look
more,
like,
you know,
Roman numerals. I didn't think about that.
I like that. And the logo, you know, it's just a nice kind of clean logo. And I like the fact that it is just one sort of strong term. I feel like it's it maybe fits a bit more the style that I want to go for. There's always an empowering thread throughout my writing and my music, and you know, I just feel like, you know, even with the fan name, we call they call themselves Livengers, like Avengers.
Love it. Okay.
So it's really cute.
I love fan names. They can go south.
Too.
That's a good one.
Yeah, no, that is a good one. And all the branding, you know, with like the POW symbol and all that,
nice.
It works.
Oh. You know, you've toured with lots of people. Like, you've toured with Lindsey Stirling, and you've done a song with Nick Jonas, and you had a track a couple of years ago, maybe even like last year, that had Offset and like
Quavo.
Oh, Quavo, yeah.
Sorry.
Mm-hmm. God, no, one of the Migos.
Get the correct Migos. Find the correct Migo. But how did you actually get into like the business? Like, what was your kind of first break? Because it's like one thing to be like, I was 13 and started writing songs, and right. then suddenly like I'm on tour with Meghan Trainor. It's like right. magically. How did that happen so many years ago?
It feels kind of magical, you know, when I look back on it, and it still felt really magical at the time, like very dream come true.
Yeah.
Well, I guess you mentioned writing a song with Nick Jonas. I toured with the Jonas Brothers as well a bit, which was great. I was a big Jonas Brothers fan. Obviously, I'm thrilled that they're back.
Too, yes.
So thrilled. And that amazing historic number one.
Yes.
Have been visiting the website.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, I keep up with them a lot. But so I actually, one of the first things that happened to me in my career is I'm from the Bay Area, but I started traveling back and forth to LA to work on music, work with different writers and producers, to just sort of develop my sound a little bit and explore. Luckily, I have supportive parents who were, you know, willing to help me do that.
Yeah.
And this is when you were a teenager.
Yes. Oh. Mm-hmm, throughout high school.
Just go off to LA.
Yeah, which didn't come with me. Okay, you know what good, I mean? Okay. It was not that far, which is great.
Right.
I'm very lucky. And so one of the things that happened actually is that I kept running into the Jonas Brothers, and
in LA.
It was a weird, really odd. And we all sort of became family friends. And I never wanted to say that I was a musician because, you know, you don't really want to be like, hey, help me out. I'm in the industry too. So we just sort of were friends. And then one day I ran into them at a recording studio and they're kind of like, what are you doing here? So that it sort
the
of
secret
came out, you know? And
surprise, this entire time I've been warming up to you because I really want to be a musician.
No, but you know, I didn't want it to be like that. So we were just friends. And then their dad, who was their manager, said that he wanted to hear my music. He came to one of my rehearsals and started working with me, introduced me to CAA. And basically at the first meeting, they were like, well, you know, there's this Big Time Rush Victoria Justice Nickelodeon tour this summer that, you know, you could open for maybe. And that was my first tour. So it was like a crazy sequence of events that really just started.
You were dropped
the ball
into the
rolling.
Deep end.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. I mean, I fell in love with touring. That was amazing.
Okay, stop. You ran into the Jonas Brothers. Okay.
Like multiple times.
How? Were you like at church or something? Like
where were
right
you?
Now, well,
like at like a smoothie place?
Well,
like,
the first time we were all living in the, we were living in the same neighborhood. So okay. It just sort of, I think I ran into them at a restaurant, like a couple different places.
So it actually was like a total natural thing.
Yeah. Okay. And then I think our mom started talking, you know, and it just became like a family friend. We all live in the same neighborhood.
You must have been the envy of every other teenage girl at that time.
Oh, so, definitely. Yeah,
I don't know. I just ran into Nick Jonas. What? Sorry.
No, I know. And actually, I have their turtles right now as well.
Wait,
Shelly,
what now?
I should just mention. Yeah. I thought you might want to know.
That's our headline.
More information about
Shelly, you got the Jonas's turtles.
Shelly Jonas. She's great. She's a tortoise, actually, I should say. Did I say turtle?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I totally misspoke.
Tortoise.
Land creature, not sea creature.
Okay.
She's super cute. They're supposed to live, like, you know,
a long time,
so I think she might outlive me. But one time they went on tour, and I don't know exactly which tour it was, and they said, can you just babysit Shelly? Because, like I said, we're in the same neighborhood. We're, like, a few houses away. And I was like, yeah, for sure. We can babysit Shelly.
Never got Shelly back up.
Yeah. And they would come over and be like, hey, Shelly. It's like, well, do you want to? No, she's happier
she's
here.
She's good.
But no, you know, we let her, like,
abandoned
walk out.
This pet.
No. I mean, I think my mom and I are, like, huge animal people, too.
Yeah.
And Shelly sort of got into a symbiotic relationship with my dog.
Oh.
Where, like, we put Shelly out in the yard and, like, she'll explore and do her thing. And then, like, we'll tell Lukey, my dog, like, go find Shelly.
Oh,
and then he'll, like, go run around, find her, and then just, like, bark. So it's, like, cute. They have little activities.
It sounds like this could inspire a song.
Yeah, there you go.
It's in there. More like one of, like, Phoebe's songs from Friends.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, 100%.
Smelly tortoise.
Smelly tortoise.
Okay, sorry.
No, that'd getting be back a hit. On track.
Sorry. Okay, yeah.
Sorry.
No, I love that. We mentioned the song with Quavo. It's called Catch a Body.
Yes.
That came out last year, and it also hit our pop songs chart.
Awesome.
New song is doing better.
Yes.
It's true.
It is. True.
And that was your first song as Livia, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you end up linking up with Quavo to begin with?
Yeah, well, that was awesome. That was actually through the producers that I was working with.
He lives
with.
Three doors down.
Right. And I just kept running into him.
You adopted his cat.
And he gave you a snake. And sorry.
You would think. But not this time. This time was a little more, rooted in reality.
Okay.
I was working with the producers, and I still am, with Rock Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
And who are amazing. And they, I guess one day having a meeting of working with somebody who worked with Migos with Quavo, and they played the song, and they said, oh, maybe Quavo would be interested in, you know, being on the song. And so it also happened very strangely. We sent it over and he just recorded something and sent it back like pretty quickly. Whoa. And it was right around the holidays too. And so it really felt like opening up like a Christmas present, like playing. I remember we were all sitting together, like playing it for the first time. And his part in that song is so great. He just like has so many different sections. And yeah. like when he goes into the more melodic part, I just remember so vividly like everybody through him being like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. So that was super cool.
That's awesome.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, and as we mentioned earlier, you added Prince Royce onto that track for a remix. As you're making new music, do you have like these collaborators in mind, or is it or do the idea of features and guest verses like come after you finish the song? Like you've got the song done, you're like, okay, so should we get a feature? Or is it more like, let me write a song and I feel like I should put a feature here, and who could that be? Like, how does that process work?
Well, with Catch a Body specifically, we wrote the song sort of always intending there to be space for a feature. Mm-hmm. Quavo was in mind very early on, but obviously that seemed like kind of...
sure.
Yeah, out of reach.
Let's get Quavo on here.
So it was amazing that it actually happened. But he was in mind, like, pretty much the whole time. Writing that song was really interesting, too. Well, first of all, just to answer your question, too, about Prince Royce, that came later down the line when the song was doing really well in Miami. Specifically, we thought it would be really cool to add, do a Spanish version. And once again, Prince Royce was, like, top of our list as well. So that was amazing to have that happen, which also happened through Rock Mafia. They're amazing. They make dreams come true.
Send Rock Mafia some amazing Christmas gifts.
I know, right? We're very close. We're like, we'd say we're like family now. But I speak Spanish too. So I got to sing in Spanish a bit too, which was really, really fun. And so then when I was performing in Miami, I would sing the Spanish version too, which was really cool. But I think collaborations are so much fun. So when there's a chance to make that happen, it's always just incredible. So Catch a Body was a great song for that.
Yeah. And, you know, as you're moving forward, obviously Damn's doing its thing right now. Mm-hmm. But are you strategizing when maybe some new music might come out?
Definitely. Okay. I'm recording all the time. A really great song I'm recording actually tomorrow. So I'm really excited. Ooh. But I'm nervous too. But
with Madonna.
Right. And we just kept running into each other. No, it's true. It sounds crazy. I know.
No, I love it.
But so I'm always in the studio working on new things. But like you said, since Damn is reacting so well and people responding so well to it, it's not like a super rush to put anything new
space.
Out. Right. Yeah. Let it live. But I'm excited to get what we've been working on, get it out there as well.
Awesome.
You said you speak Spanish. This isn't one of the questions, but it's just prompted by the said that you speak Spanish. How many languages do you speak?
Just Spanish and English.
Do you have like any sort of Spanish heritage or anything?
No, just from school.
Okay.
And I'm kind of nerdy, so, you know, I would love to learn more languages as well. Like one of my best friends is Persian, and she'll teach me like Farsi phrases all the time, just so that like when we're around her friends and family, I can just like pull them out and people will be like,
out.
What? You speak Farsi? But like, not really. But she gave me the Farsi Rosetta Stone, so one day maybe I'll learn Farsi.
Sure.
Nice.
And part of that, I was reading an interview with you, and I think it was with a British publication, and you used terms like mum. And I was like,
did
wait.
You use them, or did they just transcribe your
they
quote?
They probably transcribed it like that.
Because like, I've seen a lot
British?
Of interviews.
Maybe her parents are European?
No, I've seen a lot of interviews. I remember seeing something with Katy Perry one time, and
they changed
mom
it?
To mom. And it's like, you can't just do that. She didn't say mom, you know?
Mom,
like,
mom.
That's weird. I wouldn't translate. Like, if Jesse J said mom, I would just
leave it
as mom.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is
funny. I know, it's funny.
Weird. Okay, so...
I didn't know. That's so funny.
Even though you've been kind of doing this music and putting out singles for almost a decade, you still haven't released like a complete album project yet. Is that something that you're working towards or looking towards doing in the future?
Definitely. As you said, it's like kind of overdue, right? But
I didn't say that.
Well, you kind of hinted, and I agree with you. It's been a long time. But
You've been busy. You've got things going on.
And, it's been, you know, I've also been in school, and I sort of had... different, you know, changing up the team and everything, and I only just recently signed with the label for the first time.
12 Tone.
They're amazing.
Kind of some heavy
hitters
there.
You're in good company.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And it's just an amazing team all around, from the artists to the executives to every single person working in that office. I just got to visit them last week in New York. I was so excited.
Crazy.
They're great. Well, so, you know, the industry's changed so much too, in that it's just kind of like you know, song after song, mm-hmm. rather than even people listening to full albums.
Right.
But it's sort of coming back around, I feel like. I feel like the focus is on albums a little bit more than it even has been in recent years, which is exciting. I would really love to at least get an EP together soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like we talked about before, too, it's Damn is doing really well. I've just signed with this new label, so we're sort of all, and I've had this new name.
Yeah.
You know, it's
new
like
name,
a
new label,
product,
new,
new name, new me. You know, so it's sort of like starting from not necessarily the beginning, but it's a fresh start.
And you mentioned school.
Yes.
You just graduated last spring, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when did you find time to do that?
From UC
yeah.
Berkeley.
Yeah, UC
yes.
Berkeley.
With a degree
economics.
In economics.
Yes.
That comes in handy yeah. in your current gig.
It does.
In the
yeah.
music industry, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everyone's always like, oh, well, we can't take advantage of you now. So, like, I've heard that exact phrase like, so many times.
I'm glad they're honest about wanting to take advantage of you.
Well, I did this really cool event recently on Wall Street that was, like, Girls Take Wall Street. And it was super cool. I couldn't believe that I was, you know, that econ and mentoring and music all kind of collided like this for
yeah.
me. So I got to speak about my experience and kind of encourage the girls to go into and to study finance and economics and why they should do that. So I definitely use the you can't take advantage of you know, line.
Mm-hmm.
But well, school, I mentioned before, I'm a bit of a nerd. You know, it's something I didn't want to give up.
Mm-hmm.
I deferred UC Berkeley when I decided to you know, sign with CAA and go on tour. That
okay.
was all happening as I was graduating high school and getting ready to start Berkeley. But I always knew that I wanted to come back, and I just kind of thought, you know, I'm gonna pause, I'm gonna just make sure that I finish this year up,
mm-hmm.
because I made sure that I did as much as I could outside of school, just kind of submitting my work to school and doing as much as I could like online. But at a certain point, to get the economics degree, I had to actually be there.
Yeah.
So I just pushed all of my upper division econ electives together in 1 year so that
sure.
I could finish
that
up.
That year must have been intense.
So fun.
Yeah, they told me not to do it, but I was kind of like, this is my only choice if I want to graduate and also still have my career.
Oh my God.
And how many units per semester? Is it on a trimester or semester?
Berkeley is, I think, the only UC that's not on a trimester
okay.
system. So
how many units did you have each semester?
I'm trying to remember.
32.
Yeah, I can't remember actually. I mean, it was a little different in each. Yeah, I mean, I pushed it all together, but I technically graduated like in the spring. I walked, but I had some summer classes.
Okay.
But everybody that I work with in the music side of things was like really understanding, and you know, I did have some shows like right around finals week, but that was a little hard. But other than that, like everything was not too crazy.
Whoa.
So did you actually like, sorry, I'm just fascinated.
Not
I mean,
at all.
I went to USC and
oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, like, amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're rivals, but like
yeah,
they say that, but I don't really get into
I
that.
Didn't go to a single football game.
Me neither.
But fight on.
Right, but fight on.
Yeah. So I was there for 4.5 years, but I didn't do anything online.
Mm-hmm.
So you were able
did
to
did you go on tour during it?
No, that's what I'm rolling up to. So did you actually, was most of your UC Berkeley career kind of done online sort of remotely, or did you, how much time did you actually spend kind of on campus in class?
So I spent like a full year, so like a fall semester, a spring semester, and a summer semester on campus.
And then the rest of it was sort of done remotely.
Yeah, and all of those classes were econ classes. So I made sure that like I said, I did them all at once,
mm-hmm.
which they don't generally like recommend. But the rest of it, sort of what they call breadth requirements, like I had placed out of language, I didn't have to do that, but you know, like any kind of science,
all the required,
you know,
literature
writing,
things,
all,
and anthropology
yeah, exactly.
stuff.
I did
That's
that
amazing.
Sort of, and I, because UC Berkeley Extension has options, so stuff like that.
So if you're an aspiring, you know, pop rock artist, musician,
mm-hmm.
you know, who
you
wants to do
economics,
you can still get a degree at UC Berkeley. They can make it happen. That's
I think if you
incredible.
Love, you know, if you have two passions or multiple passions and you really love them both, there's definitely always a way to make it
yeah.
work.
Wow.
I still found time to take a fun class, too, which was called UC Hogwarts.
There was a class about Harry Potter?
There was.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you're sorted into houses. I was in Gryffindor. I was voted prefect and then head girl, and then we won the House Cup and Quidditch. I'm just saying. It's my,
sure.
like, proudest
How
moment.
How do you play Quidditch, like, in real life? I'm, like, super
you know,
curious
Or was this
now.
One of the online classes?
No, this was, like, in person. I
like,
also, by the
I
way...
You're like, all my econ classes were done there. It was really important, except I had this one Harry Potter class in person.
Do you want to hear a secret about that?
Yes, I would.
It's actually really embarrassing. And I promise, like, I prioritized my school, and I did very well in, like, my econ classes, But in order to take the Harry Potter decal, I had to literally request something called a time conflict override, so that because it happened at the same time as one of the discussion sections for like a super important econ class. But I really wanted to take the Harry Potter elective, so I was just like,
priorities.
It's fine. I'll just go to the one this week. Like, I mean, on Thursday, not on Tuesday. You know, that's it worked amazing. Out. But everyone's like, why did you do that? But it's Harry Potter. You had to.
It's a full.
I haven't really told people
full
that.
Education.
You need a little bit of levity there amongst all the economics crud.
Okay, so finally, we've talked a lot about you going on these tours early in your career. You know, moving forward, I'm assuming like you're thinking about hitting the road again.
Yes.
You know, what did you learn from, you know, touring with all of these big names?
Meghan Trainor, Jessie J, and Jonas Brothers, and
et cetera, et cetera.
You had to have learned a lot from all these folks.
I really did, because I would go and I would watch them every night too. And it's just so interesting. I think one of the main things I learned was how much they improvise as well and feed off of what the crowd is giving them. Jessie J is so amazing because... she was kind of the epitome of that improvisation, because not only does she really change the way she sings, actually, the songs every night, and she was even kind of sick when I toured with her as well. And
vocal issues,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, maybe it was around that time. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if she had like a cold or something, but she sounds like this world.
Even sick, she still sounds
exactly. I know, you could never tell. But also, she would call out individual people in the audience too, which was really cool. And I feel like it's nice to change up the show and sort of make it not so rehearsed. Because when I first started touring, I get more nervous about the speaking in between the songs than like the songs themselves, because I know what I'm going to do when I'm singing, but in between I just get kind of nervous. So I think just sort of going off script as much as possible is something I learned. And then also like with the Jonas Brothers, even back before I even toured with them, just being a fan and going to some shows, they just are having so much fun on stage that it really just makes you want to have fun with them too. I feel like that was a big lesson as well. You know, just so much. I think... they're also just all of the people I've toured. They're so kind, and they just create such an amazing environment on tour that I've been so lucky. I had just the best experiences, and I really can't wait to get back on the road again.
Ooh, that's exciting. Yeah. We'll leave it on that note.
So
look for her on
out.
The road soon. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank
and
you.
Good luck with all your new music, and we look forward to hearing it.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
When we break up, damn, gonna hurt real bad, damn. Want you back down, but I won't do that. Wish we could start over.
Thank you so much to Livia for coming into the office and hanging out with us, and especially for taking care of the Jonas Family Tortoise for all these years. The fans appreciate you.
It was such a. She was so. I was. I mean, I assume that I assume all of our interviews are going to be fine and nice. But I had a really nice time chatting with her.
Same,
and it was and she her career trajectory is so interesting, and how now she has this degree and she's like, yeah, no one's going to be like pulling crap with me.
Yeah,
I mean,
don't try to pull any financial weirdness
shenanigans
with Olivia.
Okay, well, let's do the chart stat of the week.
You're a rich girl and you're gone too far, cause you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far, cause you know it don't matter anyway.
This week in 1977, Daryl Hall, friend of the podcast, and John Oates topped the Billboard Hot 100 for the first time with their single, Rich Girl.
I really love that we can call Daryl Hall friend of the podcast. Yeah. He's like, who?
I was on what thing? The what cast? It was the duo's first of six number ones and their third top 10 out of a whopping 16.
Man.
Hall & Oates later scored number ones with Kiss on My List, Private Eyes, I Can't Go For That, No Can Do, Man Eater, and Out of Touch. Quick. Katie.
Yes.
Can you name what surprising chart I Can't Go For That, No Can Do also hit number one on?
Rap songs.
Well, we didn't have a rap chart in 1982.
Hip hop songs.
We had
urban songs.
It was the equivalent of what we now call the hot R&B hip hop songs chart.
Okay. So it was very close.
Yeah. But I think at the time we either called it Hot Soul Singles or Hot Black Singles.
All incredible. So, and all incredible to have Hall & Oates on them.
I feel like we may have called it black singles at the time.
I do. I mean, we've had these conversations before. I remember, like, George Michael got a lot of play on black radio. It's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, like, he had, like, One More Try, I think, was number one on the black singles chart. Hot black singles.
But this does not surprise me at all, because I Can't Go For That has the coolest beat of all time. And I mean, it was a hip-hop beat before people were making hip-hop beats.
R&B radio was playing Hall & Oates, like, back in the day.
Yeah. It was Philly blue-eyed soul.
And if anyone's wondering why we would call a chart black, it's because it was based on what the department names at the record labels would term themselves when they were working, like, urban radio. And, like, we call it urban radio now, but the sort of the catch-all collective term was like, oh, we're working this to black radio.
Right.
Or we're working, you know, like, this is our black department.
It's jarring now. It but sounds at the time, so not jarring.
Weird. Yeah. Like, in retrospect, it's just so weird.
Well, but people like George Michael and Hall & Oates made it so obviously clear that it needed a different name. Like, Soul. It needs the name Soul.
Yeah. And now we don't call it Soul.
Yeah. And now that's gone, too.
That chart just the chart doesn't have any soul anymore. All right, so there you have it. This week in 1977, Hall & Oates hit number one for the first time on the Hot 100 with Rich Girl. Oh, you're a rich girl, and you're going too far, because you know it don't matter anyway. And you can rely on the old man, buddy. You can rely on the old man, buddy. It's a rich girl, and you're going too far, because you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man, honey. It's a bitch girl.
Bitch girl. Okay, I'm going to stop now.
So, I mean, their songs are so good.
They're so undeniable.
So good. If you don't own, I think it's the very best of Hall & Oates, where it's that sort of, like, it's like a white cover where, and it's, there's like a blue background, and it's like two close-up
pictures. I've got a double album version of it. I think that...
Is that the vinyl one?
No, it's just a CD, but... and I'm sure I said this when Daryl Hall was on the show, but I got to see them at the Troubadour, which is the tiniest little venue here in LA.
It's like, what, 400-500 people?
Oh my God.
Maybe,
it was insane. And I got to come in like first early because I was with our photographer. It was when I was at MTV. Our photographer and I were the first people through the door, so we were just planted ourselves at the stage. It was insane.
Wow. Okay, so what song should we go out on?
Well, I mean,
a Hall & Oates track?
Obviously, I'm going with... I Can't Go For That.
No Can Do.
Yeah.
See you guys next time.
Bye. Yeah.